week on the Renovation Radio podcast, we talk all things appraisal with appraisal MC's Alex Massa. Alex and his sister started in the appraisal industry when they were in college, and they have a unique perspective on the appraisal industry. As licensed appraisers and also the CEO of a large AMC, appraisal management company, Alex shares his knowledge with us. We talk appraiser independence, who can actually talk to an appraiser, reconsideration of value, a day in the life of an appraisal, appraisal gaps, the new desktop appraisals, and where we're headed with real estate values. So get ready, folks. This is a great one. Renovation Radio, because we're all a work in progress. Alex Massa, welcome to Renovation Radio.
Mark, thanks for having me. How are you?
It's a great day to be alive. How are you, sir?
I'm doing very well. I'm very happy to be on this call and share some wealth of knowledge on the appraisal industry.
No, me as well. Thank you for taking out some time. We certainly appreciate it. Well, I know you're busy, and we'll get right to it and talk about all things appraisal. But before we do that, let's talk about you for a second. Tell our audience a little bit, you know, how you got into the appraisal business and a little bit about you.
Mark, yeah, I appreciate the time. All things appraisal in a 1 hour podcast is going to be very difficult, right? But we're going to chip away at it. Alex Massa, CEO of Appraisal MC. I'll tell you how I got started in this industry. It's a long story. I'll keep it short. I was looking for a job in college, and a friend of mine's brother-in-law had this medium-sized residential appraisal firm, and they needed some help. And so I changed my college schedule to accommodate to where I could work every day, Monday, Wednesday, Friday at this appraisal office. This was back in late 98, 99. And back in those days, we would have to develop pictures at Eckerd's for appraisals and then tape them onto appraisal reports. So that gives me, that dates me a little bit, but that's how we did it.
Eckerd's.
Wow. Yeah. You remember the Eckerd's? I mean, it was the Walgreens of our era, right, Mark?
Sure. So that's actually for sure the first time anyone's ever mentioned Eckerd's on this podcast. So that is a first. That is awesome.
Yeah. So I dove in head first and really enjoyed it. Graduated college after 9/11. And it was a very tough job market. And I didn't think I'd continue appraising past college, but it was such a lucrative job. I was enjoying it. And I continue doing it. So started my own appraisal firm with my sister a few years later. And then the financial crisis hit in 2008. And prior to 2008, it was easy for any loan officer, mortgage banker to call me directly and order an appraisal. Well, Appraisal MC, out of the ashes of the financial crisis, was came up, and we started Appraisal MC in order to be that firewall between the loan officers and the appraisers. We thought, with our background in the appraisal industry, the knowledge of the appraisal process, we'd be a perfect fit. So here we are today. We're expanded into 33 states. We still have a staff division of appraisers in Texas, but our AMC services cross many state lines. So that's where we're at today. Me personally, I've got two young boys. So between work and my young boys, that keeps me 100% busy. I love it. Anything outdoors, golf, surfing when I can, jogging, mountain biking, anything that keeps me outdoors in nice weather, I enjoy. So that's a little bit about me.
That's awesome. So you are appraisal through and through. It's you and your sister. You did it in college, I think, at the University of Houston, right?
That's correct. Yeah. And interestingly enough, both my sister and I were getting degrees in entrepreneurship, which consistently ranks first in the nation And we just took what we were learning in school and applied it to what we were doing in our work life. And it's been a successful recipe.
And then obviously making lemonade out of lemons with the financial crisis and the things that the industry put in place, to the firewalls we put in place to make sure the appraisers could give us their opinion of value, which is sort of a good segue into the next thing I wanted to talk about. And one of the things that still happens even to this day, even fast forward 13, 14 years since the financial crisis, and loan officers and mortgage companies are used to dealing with AMCs, but sometimes that they get so emotional about the appraisal reports that they get back. And so one of the things I'm always reminding loan officers of is, hey, you know, by definition, an appraisal is an opinion of value. It's not a computer, right? It's an actual person going out and evaluating the merits of a particular property.
Yeah, absolutely. If you don't mind, I'll expand on that bit more. Yeah, share some knowledge with our listeners. So you're right. It's an opinion of value, but it's also an opinion of value with very strict rules and guidelines that are given to us by the GSEs, which are Fannie, Freddie, FHA, USDA, VA. Now, if you've been in real estate, you've heard the definition of market value, and that's basically a willing buyer and a willing seller. That works in a cash transaction, but if you're getting financing and you need to get an appraisal, you've got to follow the rules that the GSEs provide. And the rules basically state that the opinion of value needs to be supported with the most recent, similar, locationally and physically similar closed sales in the market area. So you're looking at a snapshot of historic data in order to provide an opinion of value as of the date that the appraiser visits the property, which is called the effective date. So in essence, it's an opinion of value based on very strict guidelines that we provide in a very long report and document. And it's basically the insurance policy for the loan amount. That's how I like to describe it.
Sure. Sure, that's perfect. And so we touched on it for a second earlier, but I wanted to go a little deeper around, you know, the financial crisis. And it's interesting, you know, some of the things that exist in, let's just say, VA lending, you know, VA has always, you know, since its inception, has always had an appraisal panel. You know, they've had their own process for getting approved to be a VA appraiser. And it was always kind of a blind draw. You really couldn't even pre-crash, you really couldn't, you know, necessarily specify which appraiser was going to do an inspection for a VA loan. And there were a few lenders in the old days, you know, pre-crash, pre-financial crisis. I'm thinking of like World Savings, going back a long time. You know, World Savings had some unique products, and they did them in a very conservative manner for 20 plus years. And one of the things they required were two appraisals, and an AMC blind draw had to make, you had to use their AMCs to place the appraisal order. So they were doing things, and again, their products had some inherent risk in them. And so they wanted that firewall between the originator or the realtor, loan officer, whatever, and the person underwriting the file and ultimately investing in the file, because they held the loans a lot of times in portfolios. So AMCs had been around, the concept had been around for a long, long time. But then after the financial crisis, we had, I don't remember exactly how if it was industry, it was part of Dodd-Frank, but we have a thing called, we call it AIR, or Appraisal Independence Requirements. But in from your standpoint, you know, why do we have AIR, Appraisal Independence Requirements?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, you brought up World Savings. My mentor, my first boss in the appraisal industry, came from World Savings. So, I'm of that mindset of compliance and having a firewall and giving the appraiser the ability to do their job to the best of their ability without any influence. And at the end of the day, that's what AIRS is. It's appraiser independence requirements. and that is utilized for conventional financing. And it's just a set of rules that the appraiser can independently analyze the property without any influence from someone that has a financial interest. So the best way to do that is by outsourcing the ordering to a third party that has no skin in the game. And the only reason that they're there is to make sure there is that compliance. Another way that you can do it legally, Mark, is have a completely separate department within your mortgage company, within the bank, that is not involved in the production of loans, but specifically only for the appraisal process. But it's very simple. Without going into the details of what it is, it's just a set of guidelines to make sure the appraiser can independently value a property.
You know, this is not new, but there you might recall, and I'll send it to you if you don't have it. But there was a meme going around, a few years ago, a couple of guys in jail. And I think the caption was something like, mortgage origination crimes. And one guy says, hey, he's like, what are you in here for? And he's like, I miscalculated the GFE by 3 pennies. How about you? And the other guy says, hey, I look directly at an appraiser. I don't know if you ever saw that meme. And if you didn't, I'll send it to you. It went around there for a while. But one of the questions we get a lot of times is, can I talk to an appraiser? And is that something that comes up in your world?
Yeah, it does. I get that question. I do a lot of presentations for realtor groups, and that's a question that the realtors have. Can we talk to the appraiser? And absolutely, you can talk to the appraiser. But you've got to be careful with how you talk to the appraiser. You cannot threaten or coerce them into pushing them for value or threaten them. You can talk to them about facts, talk to them about the house, talk to them about the sales in the area, just information that might be helpful for the appraiser to produce the best report that they can. So there's a firewall, yes. It's meant to prevent fraud and coercion and undue influence. Can you still talk to the appraiser? Absolutely. And I would recommend it. Especially if you've got a difficult or unique property and you want to share some data with an appraiser, it's absolutely acceptable to do that.
That's great. That's great. And actually a great segue into my next question. So I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe part of the AIR or appraisal independence requirements is when there's a disconnect between perhaps the sales price or the opinion of value of the owner, or in a refinance situation, or maybe the home buyer or seller in a purchase situation, where the person who paid for the appraisal can request what's called a reconsideration of value or a ROVE, where they ask the appraiser, they disagree with the appraiser's opinion of value, and they can provide maybe some facts or other information like you're talking about to the appraiser. How does that process work?
Yeah, I love this process because it's a hairy process. A lot of people come at it very emotionally driven. And one thing that I always share with realtors is that speaking to appraisers is like speaking to an engineer. They live in a world of facts and analyzing data, and that's all they really want to see. They're happy to receive information from other parties to analyze it. How it's presented is important. So yeah, you've got a difference between the opinion of value and the sales price. Someone disagrees. What can you do? Provide information to the lender, and the lender will provide that to the either AMC or the appraisal desk to send to the appraiser for review. And I always like to tell people, I invented the 3 R's when it comes to reconsideration of value, and that's read, review, and rebuttal. And the first thing you should do when you don't agree with a value is get a copy of the appraisal and read it. Why are you reading it? One, because you want to look and see, is there any information in here that is incorrect? Did the appraiser miss any information that could materially affect the value? I'll give you a perfect example. You know, those appraisals have 800 fields and boxes that have to be filled out. And a few years ago, we were reviewing an appraisal and there's a box for pool. So when there's a pool, you check this box. And it was not checked. We're going through the report and we see pictures of a pool. We look at the survey. There's pictures of a pool. So sure enough, there is something that the appraiser missed that could materially affect the value. Let's take note of that. Let's provide that to the lender in the reconsideration. So the second R is reviewing the report. You're looking for any inconsistencies. The next thing that you're reviewing are the sales comps, is what we call them, utilized in the report. Are the sales utilized in the report the best sales available in the market? Because that is what the appraiser is required to utilize. If you have other sales that you want to present, I think the best way to put together the last R, which is the rebuttal, is explain why the sales you are providing are better than the ones within the report. So the rebuttal is basically sales, if you've got them, and why they're better than the ones in the report, and any inconsistencies that the appraiser may have missed that could materially affect the value. So that's the reconsideration, the value process. Just don't call the appraiser's baby ugly, right? That's what I like to tell people. Just provide the data, let the appraiser look it over.
I think that that's so true. And I think we get lost in that sometimes, is there's an actual person who drove out to this property and spent a fair amount of time measuring, taking pictures, getting back to their office, doing market research. And they're not like just putting their thumb in the air and just guessing. Right.
Right.
There were several hours of work and time, you know, put into the inspection report, and it's not a guess. I mean, and the appraisers have an apprentice process. I mean, they're very well trained. They're usually experts in the local markets. We talked about Eckerd's earlier. I'm going to date myself even further with Joe Friday, right? It's, you know, just the facts, ma'am. I mean, we don't, you know, I loved your analogy of engineers. I mean, they really are, you know, engineers in a sense. I mean, they really. You know, it is an opinion of value, but it's based on the facts, right? And so give it, if I miss some facts, you know, they probably will take it a little bit personally, but at the end of the day, if they're facts, they're probably going to add those facts into the reconsideration of value and amend their initial report. But it's still a person involved, it's still a person's time involved. So you are, in a way, you're telling that person who did this inspection and spent all that time that, you know, they may have missed something, and it's just human nature. When someone tells you you're wrong, you don't immediately jump and say and admit that, oh yeah, you're right, I was wrong. That does take a little bit of in facts help, right?
Absolutely, Mark. You know, one thing appraisers are not really good at is understanding that this is a very stressful investment, right? It's a difficult process to go through. Or it can be a difficult process to go through. It's stressful. You've got movers, you've got that you're planning, and you've got to sell your house, buy a house. So I get it. Emotions get involved. But you know, that's what we do as an AMC. We kind of filter these ROVs to pull out just the facts and get them to the appraiser. And that's what the appraisers want to do. That's the service we provide on our end.
Yeah, we have a saying at Loan Depot, home means everything. And it really does. I mean, your home is everything. And if you don't have a home, that's a tough bill. If you don't have having a home every night to come to, it's huge. So it's a big, it's our industry. It's what we do every day, but it means a lot. So that's huge. I'm glad you said that. So from the AMC appraisal standpoint, I mean, do you guys get requests that maybe someone has done the ROV process? It was not you know, successful in their mind, that the appraisers, the facts that were presented weren't relevant or whatever. And so the value stays the same. I mean, do you guys ever get requests to order a second appraisal?
Sure. With it comes some difficulties, right? There's some GSEs, for example, FHA will not allow you to just order a second appraisal. It's right. Straight out, like, not allowed unless it's a flip property or a couple of other reasons. But basically, once an appraisal is done for FHA, that appraisal stays with that property for 120 days, regardless of new contract or new borrower. With conventional loans, in order to order a second appraisal, you have to prove that there's something materially wrong with the first appraisal. And a disagreement on value is not considered something that's materially wrong. We're looking for hard fact data that the appraisal was not done correctly, not done to certain guidelines that USPAP may require or other guidelines that Fannie or Freddie may require. In those instances, yes, a second appraisal can be ordered. I would say they're approved maybe 20% of the time. We as an AMC have to also help the underwriter in showing proof, because Fannie and Freddie can come back and say, show me the proof that the first appraisal was materially flawed. So we've got to document that and keep that available in case there is an audit. So it's not as easy as you would think. You know, the workaround around that, Mark, and I hate to say it, is on the conventional appraisal, if you're not happy with the appraisal, one way to get a new appraisal is start the process with a new lender. Sure. And that's how people get around that. You can do that with conventional loans, not with FHA.
Well, and I work with mortgage brokers and small mortgage bankers, and that's one of the huge benefits of being a small company in the nuance and the niche, being able to use multiple lenders and give your clients, you know, many different options. That's the beauty of our channel and the beauty of what the mortgage broker brings to the consumers. That's a great point.
Yep, absolutely.
So one more question on that. Typically when a second or if the first appraisal is deemed deficient for whatever reason, and the review appraiser or the QC or whoever determines that a second appraisal is needed or warranted, typically who pays for the second appraisal in those situations?
That's a good question. Yeah. Typically the lender does.
Okay.
There's no set protocol on that. So right. It just really depends. Yeah.
Yep. And that's what we've seen the same thing. I was just curious what you saw from your end. So
yeah.
So we've seen consumers offering to pay for second appraisals. We've seen mortgage brokers offering to pay for second appraisals just to get one. But at the end of the day, we've got to prove the first one's deficient for the audit. I mean, and so that's we get it too. So we talked about the sort of the emotional human side of the home buyer, home seller, and home, and of course, home means everything. But let's talk about the human side a little bit of the appraiser. You know, you've got, I believe, staff appraisers that work for your company, and then you also have appraisers that work for you as third parties, you know, through your AMC network and your approved appraiser network. But what's for our audience who maybe are not all appraisers? What's the day in the life of an appraiser? I mean, like, some questions, like, you know, do they go out and do inspections every day? I know it's different for each one and depends on the market and that kind of thing. And how many stops are typical in a day? You know, how does a typical day look for an appraiser?
Wow, that's a great question. I'll tell you what, I was in the field for many, many years. And one thing that I always did is, as an appraiser, I always worked a lot of hours. It is a very time-consuming job. And when you think a job's going to take you 4 hours, it usually ends up taking 5 or 6. But a day in the life of a full-time appraiser, let's talk about full-time appraisers. Sure, so yeah, sure. They typically go out in the field and will go inspect 1-2 properties. The site visit is really a funny thing, because a lot of appraisers for a small house aren't there for longer than maybe 15 or 20 minutes. And homeowners are always puzzled by that. It's a question we get often. or a comment we get often, hey, the appraiser was only here for 15 minutes. And that's really all an appraiser needs for a small house. All they're doing is measuring the property and getting photo evidence of condition, quality, photos of every room, photos of the exterior, and just gathering data. It's not an inspection. It's very different than the home inspection. We were just looking at cosmetic facilities of the property. After that data is gathered, the appraiser goes back into the office to basically work on the report. And a full report is, if you've seen one, it's about a 40-page document, Mark. Sure. And it takes hours to put together. And within that report is an analysis of the neighborhood, an analysis of the market, an analysis of the comparables that were selected, maps, photos, just basically the summary of all the appraiser's evidence. And I would say a full-time appraiser in a metro area is doing somewhere between 30 to 40 reports a month.
Wow.
And that is probably more than full-time job. I think that's more than 40 hours. It is a very, very time-consuming job. Appraisers work very, very hard. And it can be tedious. So that's the life of an appraiser.
So it's very similar to an underwriter. It's about the same level of pipeline, if you will, for a mortgage underwriter, somewhere between, say 30, 40, maybe 50, 60 for a real productive underwriter. So that's very, very similar. It's interesting. So another thing I wanted to chat about for a second, something that's come up, that's been around forever, but it's come up lately, and I've seen it in some sales contracts. There's a thing called the appraisal gap. And I believe it's where, and you've seen it, of course, in many of the Texas markets and across in many markets now. I think Redfin does a really good job of collecting the data on the percentage of houses that are coming in above the sales contract price.
Right.
A lot of times the sales contract, I guess, is accounting for that. And they're saying, hey, how is the home buyer going to account for what's called the appraisal gap? If they want to pay that differential, do they have the funds to do it? And we actually had in that previous episode, we had Haley Duhon from RHMI, and she's got a whole strategy around how to use mortgage insurance to help close the appraisal gap, which was a pretty unique way to do that. But have you seen that in appraisal and sales contracts? And is that something that's affected, your appraisers in the field?
That's a great question. Yeah, of course, we've seen it. There's a shortage of inventory in so many markets. It's driving prices up. The competition for well-priced homes is still extraordinarily high, even with rates ticking up. So a lot of people are having to offer more than the list price. A lot of people are having to offer more than what it can appraise for. And sellers need to be careful when selecting the right contract. You could have 10 or 20 contracts on one property in a weekend on a very competitive Wow. house, right? And Sure. how do you make your offer competitive? And that's what this appraisal gap is, that hey, even if it does not appraise at the sales price, I've got enough funds to cover the difference, or I've got enough funds to cover part of the difference. I guess the question is, how does that affect an appraisal? And one thing that appraisers do get on purchases is a copy of the contract. So we do see this data. It should not affect our final opinion of value. That doesn't change the comps. It doesn't change the adjustments in the market. What it does do is it gives us further support that if we do appraise it over the list price, that we can explain to the underwriter within the report, this is a multiple offer situation. This price that I'm listing here as my opinion is supported in the market, but there's more explanation, I guess we would say, to the underwriter to not raise that red flag, right? So, yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, that's it's out there. It's not really affecting how we appraise homes, though.
Right. And it can't. I mean, it's got to be, back to Joe Friday, it's got to be, just the facts. But but we still get these emotional situations. I was dealing with one just this week where, you know, the listing agent is putting a lot of pressure on our client, the loan officer, because an appraisal came in low. It was a multiple offer situation. And, you know, my pushback was, hey, if the listing agent is so upset, you know, can they provide the comps for us that they used when they set the sales price, you know, with the seller, you know? And they're like, well, that's none of our business. And I'm like, well, it may not be any of your business, but they're the ones that are putting pressure on you. And, you know, hey, they're the ones that set the sales price, not you. That they kind of create, if there's comps out there that would support a higher price, they should share those with us or raise the price, right? I mean, there's a reason why they set the price where it was, is because that's probably where it should have been in the first place, possibly. So
yeah, Mark, that's such a good point. You know, the strategy most of the time when listing a property is not to list it low in this kind of market, right? You're listing it at market or above. And when it goes under contract, even further above that, questions will arise and how do you support it? So that's a great point. And I just want to share with the listeners that appraisers get it. You know, we know you've got 10 offers over list price, and the definition of market value is a willing buyer and willing seller, unless you're getting financing, then right. You know, you've got to deal with the rules that are set forth by the lenders and the insurers, and you got to cover the difference. The good thing is, with that many offers and that much competition, that people are paying the difference, and that's creating the increase in values, and that's supporting the new comps for the next file and the next file. So they continually go up and up with people being able to pay that difference. So
that's great. That's actually a great segue into my next question. So we touched a couple times earlier about the financial crisis. And I remember, you know, what I was doing in, let's say, 2007 and 2008. And this is my 29th year in the mortgage banking business. So I was right in the middle of it when this was happening in that time. So were you, for your origin story earlier. But I remember, you know, having some knowledge of some of the local markets, and, you know, the appraisers were feeling tremendous pressure. You know, if they checked declining market on an inspection report, an appraisal report, it was likely they may not get any more orders from that loan officer. You know, and so there was a problem, you know, for the appraisers. And we knew, you know, I mean, I say we knew, a lot of folks knew that the market, some of these markets were declining, Las Vegas, Florida, you know, Phoenix, many others. And we knew these markets were declining, and that the appraisal orders kept coming in without declining market. And it was just a problem. And then, so we've got appraisal independence now. Their appraisal orders are not necessary. There's a firewall now between the, you know, the people that are earning commissions on these deals and the people that are actually providing the engineers behind the data, you know, behind the lending decisions. So with that's in place. So I feel like that's a good thing we have in the industry now versus 2008. But I still get the question a lot: is the market overvalued? And so sort of a subjective question. I mean, how do you feel about your local market there in Texas, and maybe what you know about your markets nationwide?
Well, it's a really good question. This is very different, Mark, from the feeling I was getting in 2008 with the financial crisis. You know, that was a bubble for many, many reasons. That was a bubble because there were people just gobbling up real estate as investment properties, thinking the market was just going to continue to go up and up and up. I think this market's a little bit different. I think this market is people moving to new areas and, you know, planting their roots somewhere new. And this is real demand, not hyped up demand like in 2008. And the demand is continuing in Texas for sure. I do see some markets where the demand is starting to slow, especially in the second home market. What do I see in the future? You know, one joke you've probably heard me say before is appraisers are experts at predicting the past. if are we in the bubble? I think some markets might be. You know, if it's speculative buying because you think you can Airbnb and everyone in the market thinks they can Airbnb properties and that's all that's being purchased. What happens when, you know, the Airbnb market is oversupplied and you can't rent it, then are these homes going to get foreclosed on? That might be a bubble. As far as areas that are owner occupied, people are moving into these properties because they're going to be working and living in these areas. I don't think that it's a bubble. I think those areas will continue to grow as long as that demand is still there.
Yeah, I do. I do see that, especially for Texas. You know, a lot of folks, as you know, moving from California to Texas, and a lot of folks moving other places. I did see somewhere the I think it's the, I forget who does this index, but there's a U-Haul one way, you know, rental moving van rental index. You know, as far as people that are moving out of a state and moving into another state, and it was surprising. I think South Carolina was the number one state in December for, you know, having one-way rentals to that state. So people are definitely moving to new places, pandemic related or work from home related, or who knows why they're doing it. I think the other thing too that's different is, you know, because 2008 and the financial crisis was so dramatic for everybody, we lost all of the small builders as far as new home construction. We lost all the small builders, most of the medium-sized builders, and we were left with just the only ones that could survive were the big, large national builders that need those giant tracts of land to build affordable housing. And so the housing starts, I forget the exact numbers, but let's just say they've been about, for almost 10 years, about 10% of the historical average, just to keep up with the nation's demographics, you know, immigration, population growth. You know, we've got 350 million people who live here now, versus maybe 330 million or whatever it was back in 08. And so those things, we need a certain number of housing starts to keep up with just demographics, much less people moving to new places, right? So we didn't keep up with the demographics for way too long. And so the housing starts in the last really just 2 years are just creeping back towards the historical norm for our industry. So and then we see now some of the medium-sized builders coming in that can do smaller tracts of land and infill type stuff, and maybe the small builders will come back eventually. So I think there's I think the trend for, you know, increases of value is not as speculative nearly as it was in 08. And the demographics and the momentum behind and the lack of home building that went on for too long, I think, hopefully, probably prevents us from being a nationwide bubble. We probably will still have pockets of it regionally, but I don't see the same things as 08 again. But it's not to say we can't make the same mistakes eventually.
Yeah, there are other variables involved too, Mark, right? How high interest rates will go.
Sure.
Could affect great point. So that's a different reason for the financial crisis. You know, that was more speculative. Speculative buying with unqualified people. I think in today's market, and Mark, you can probably speak better to this, is in order to buy a home, you need to be well qualified. And that at least gives the market a better safety net that people can move into these homes and actually afford them, right? That's what's important to understand is affordability and being able to afford the home that you're in is so important to the longevity of real estate. And that's why I think I don't think we're in a bubble. I do think some prices in some markets are high, but it's what you're saying. It's just the construction has not caught up with the demand. Eventually it will, and it'll level off, but I don't think it'll just spike down.
Yep. And then you're right. The borrowers are well qualified. Especially, and everybody talks about the millennials. I hate those cliches, but the millennials are coming to the table with tremendous amounts of savings. They have great jobs. Their jobs are very mobile, as far as, you know, different things they're doing to earn income. They're not tied, not as maybe subjective to layoffs and big company kind of pressures. They can work anywhere, and it's they're very well qualified versus the types of loans we were making, unfortunately, in the late 2000s. Right. Hey, one more question, then we can sort of wrap this up. So one new thing, and it may be a little bit late in my opinion, and I'm curious your opinion, the GSEs, Fannie and Freddie, are now offering or trying to offer what they call desktop appraisals. What's have you seen any of those requests yet for a desktop appraisal?
Yes. Yeah. Let me fill you in. You know, it's funny that, you know, I don't want to get myself in trouble, but the government is very reactive and not proactive.
Sure.
It would have been nice to have these products prior to COVID.
right.
Yeah, but, and they had some flexibilities, you know, they did adjust quickly. So the appraisal world definitely thanks them for that. And, you know, so does the real estate world. They kept us afloat and figured out ways to keep moving. But now, in lieu of traditional reports, in some instances, the lender may order what's called a desktop 1004. And this is a new form that just came out this month. They beta tested it with a few companies and appeared to be successful. And I'll tell you the differences between a traditional appraisal and a desktop. Traditional appraisal, the appraiser is going out, the licensed appraiser is going out, measuring the property and gathering the information needed to produce the report. In the desktop, the appraiser is going to be working from their office, not going into the field. Someone else will be gathering the data. And what specifically is needed is a floor plan of the subject property. What's different about the floor plan and the sketch on the traditional report is that this floor plan that they require on desktops also requires it to include interior walls, because we're looking for any functional obsolescence that could affect the value. Just giving the appraiser very detailed information of the floor plan of the house. In addition, certain photo requirements are required on desktops. You need a front street rear picture of the subject property. You need pictures of all the bathrooms, main living areas, the kitchen. And you need enough information to produce credible assignment results. And that's where this gets tricky, because it's up to the appraiser to determine what is credible. And do they have enough information about this house to produce a report that is credible? It's becoming very difficult to place these. I think that the buy-in for appraisers at the moment, because it's so new, it has not been very good. They're worried about the liability. They're worried about the, I guess they're worried about their career in general and prices of appraisals and how this affects their business. Mainly, I think it's a liability issue. Someone else gathering the data for them that may not be as qualified, may not include all the information that they need to produce credible assignment results. Like, did they take a picture of a big hole in the wall? Or did they just take a picture of the kitchen excluding that hole in the wall? It's going to take some time for the market to buy in. Here's the other part. Appraisers right now don't want to lower their fees significantly, and some don't even want to lower it at all. And we still have to send someone out to gather that information in the field, and that takes time and money as well. So in most instances that we've seen so far, the desktop is more expensive option than the traditional report. So it's going to take some time to work itself out. Eventually, I think it'll be a product that's utilized more, but we've got to get appraisers to buy in. And yeah, that's their decision whether they want to do that report or not. If they decline it, it can still be upgraded to a traditional report. So it's not the end of the world. And to be quite honest, being an appraiser myself, I think I'd feel more comfortable gathering the data myself or having a trainee that I trained gather the data for me would be maybe another option. There's always been some hesitancy to allow that. There was some more flexibility during COVID, and lenders started accepting that more. Fannie and Freddie have always allowed trainees to go out in the field and the supervisor sign without inspecting the property on properties under $1 million. A lot of lenders did not accept that. So we'll see how it goes. I'm still cautious in my opinion of it. I just want to see how this really benefits, at the end of the day, how this benefits the consumer. Is this product going to be cheaper, better, faster? We don't know quite yet.
Right. I appreciate that color. That's very helpful. That question has been come up a lot lately, and that definitely helps. That helps answer the question for sure. Well, hey man, Alex, thanks so much for your time. This has been amazing, incredible. A masterclass on appraisals here in less than an hour. So we appreciate your expertise and appreciate you taking some time out to be with us on Renovation Radio. Tell us a little bit more about Appraisal MC. So how can folks get in touch with you guys? Tell us about your business development. Are y'all taking on new clients? Do you guys do trade shows? Let's learn a little bit more about Appraisal MC.
Appraisal MC is definitely taking on new clients. You can look us up on appraisalmc.com, and all our contact information is there. This month, trade shows, we will be at the TMBA April, I think, 24th, 25th, 26th. That's in Dallas, Texas. We've got a couple of more local Dallas Mortgage Bankers Association golf tournament that we'll be at next week. We've got the Houston Mortgage Bankers Association golf tournament that we'll also be at next week. But we are a very, very boutique type AMC. We handle everything in-house. We do not outsource anything anywhere. We've got our employees that do the account management and order the appraisals. We've got our employees that do the QC side. And it's a pick up the phone and call type of business. We are not the McDonald's of AMCs. We cater to service. And that's why Loan Depot has added us as an AMC. They want good AMCs that can communicate and help their clients through the process. Sometimes the appraisal process can be daunting and difficult, and there are assignments that need some help getting pushed through, or explanations, or sometimes even just ordering the right type of appraisal can be a challenge. So we've got people on hand to help there. I can be reached at alex@appraisalmc.com, and I'm happy to field any questions. And Mark, thank you very much for having me on the call today. And I know you're a wealth of knowledge. You had great questions. We could talk probably all day about appraisals, but I think we gave the listeners a good snapshot of current, current market and, what's to come with these new desktops. So thank you for those questions.
No, I couldn't agree more. And thank you again for being a part of Renovation Radio and sharing your knowledge.
Great, Mark. Have a great day. Thank you.
Thanks, Alex. You too, man.
Thanks for listening to the Renovation Radio podcast. Please help the show by following us and rating us on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts. Please help us spread the word by sharing our podcast on your social media. The views, information, and opinions expressed on Renovation Radio are solely those of the individuals involved. Renovation Radio, because we're all a work in progress.